Hello, I'm Andrea Tavchar, a college public relations professor based in Toronto. My goal for my podcast is to interview PR practitioners with interesting stories to tell, and I wanted to share those with my students. I've decided to call it PR Delivered.
We are basically just doing little mini research projects every day about any topic. You know, we follow all the local media, we follow all the local influencers. When they post about, you know, something to do with public health, we read all the comments and replies on their posts. We read the comments and replies to our own posts. We're constantly trying to gauge moods and narrative and then using that to fuel our content.
Here's a question. Guess which North American city's public health unit has the most followers on their Twitter account? If you guessed Ottawa's, you'd be right. In the early days of the pandemic, I read about Ottawa Public Health's success with their Twitter account. The social media team was doing such a great job of engaging their Twitter community that they even caught the attention of Ryan Reynolds. Yes, that Ryan Reynolds, the Deadpool and Free Guy guy. I was inspired by their work and intrigued to learn more about their strategy. I had hoped to invite the team to join me on PR Delivered, but I didn't have an in. Fast forward 2 years. During class one day, while I was showcasing Ottawa Public Health's Twitter account, a student told me she could be my in and connect me with Kevin Parent, Ottawa Public Health's Program and Project Management Officer. Kevin and I met via email, and a week later, here we are on Zoom for our interview. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me here.
I'm, as you know, like this has been 2 years in the waiting. I'm just so pleased to have you here and bring some insights into this great PR that I see happening on behalf of your organization and work that I know you're heavily involved in. So thank you for your time and let's get started. First of all, could you tell us about yourself and your background? Like, what was your PR journey to Ottawa Public Health?
Absolutely. And once again, I mean, it's beyond flattering to be able to do something like this. The fact that, you know, a little public health Twitter account gets attention like this is still so wonderfully humbling. My beginnings before working in public health, I worked in the service industry. I bartended in downtown Ottawa for a while. When I left the service industry and I got into the world of marketing, started to kind of hit a point where I'd you know, hit that proverbial ceiling. I had a college diploma at the time. And I remember having the conversation with my wife about, you know, the terrifying decision of going back to university in my early 30s with the little one at home. I had, you know, one child at the time, now I have three. And so I went to Carleton University, majored in communications, minored in sociology. When I left shortly after I graduated, I saw a really interesting job posting on the City of Ottawa website for, you know, social media with the public health unit. And what I loved about it right from the bat is I enjoyed that, you know, it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't the, you know, going to work for some cool hip marketing firm or some fun brand. It was public health. It was, you know, an opportunity to really try to take something that shouldn't be, you know, isn't traditionally engaging and try to make it, you know, something that people will pay attention to. So I enjoyed the idea of the challenge right off the bat. I've been in this role now for almost 4 years and it has been an absolutely phenomenal journey the whole time.
That sounds, you know, and you came from hospitality, which is interesting and brings its own set of skills to communication. Mm-hmm. And you talked about your appeal, the appeal of Ottawa Public Health. For the listeners, could you just explain the role of a public health unit and the types of roles that are on the team?
Absolutely. I mean, public health in general was summed up rather wonderfully, actually, by your medical officer of health, Dr. Eileen Davila, just before the pandemic, where she said when public health is working well, it's invisible. All the work we do is behind the scenes. You know, like when public health is doing a good job, you don't hear constant news about measles outbreaks or hepatitis outbreaks or you know, foodborne illness outbreaks at restaurants or whatnot. So it is health protection, health promotion. A lot of harm reduction, you know, like supervised consumption sites, access to sexual health services and things like that. Obviously, we have, you know, our public health inspectors out there in restaurants and we do water samples at local beaches and pools and all that. I mean, there's probably a list of 100 things that a public health unit does. And the public health communications team, we're in charge of making sure that you have the information you need to make kind of the best decisions in your life. You know, the things that you need to know, you know, which beaches should you stay away from because of high levels of E. coli? What sexually transmitted and bloodborne infectious outbreaks do you need to be worried about and, you know, be mindful of your sexual health activities and things like that. So prior to COVID-19, it was just myself. It was little old me doing all the social media work. Now there's four of us that run the Ottawa Public Health accounts. And we are on, Ottawa Public Health is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and we have just started dabbling into TikTok.
So, and you say we'll get back to some of the details around the other platforms shortly. Your Twitter account has gained traditional media attention with articles by CBC and CTV citing that you're the most popular public health account in North America. I mean, that is quite an accomplishment. And you dare to be funny. I mean, having talked about what public health is meant to be, you dare to be funny. That is quite the accomplishment. Can you tell us how you got there?
Absolutely. I mean, we started with a few different premises, you know, when we first approached our social media strategy. The first one just being that it doesn't matter how good your message is if nobody's paying attention to it. You know, social media is such a fast-paced environment and there's a lot of information. You need to get somebody's attention and have them want to pay attention to what you have to say before you can even deliver your message. And so, you know, that's kind of where we start. It's a very audience-first approach. You know, we read all the comments, we read all the replies. We are basically just doing little mini research projects every day about any topic. You know, we follow all the local media, we follow all the local influencers. When they post about, you know, something to do with public health, we read all the comments and replies on their posts. We read the comments and replies to our own posts. We're constantly trying to gauge moods and narrative and then using that to fuel our content, you know, and everything we do, as much as, yes, you know, we do enjoy being humorous from time to time, but even that is also research and evidence-based. You know, we are basically just giant nerds over here. There's a running joke on our communications team about the book reports that our social media team has produced. So, for example, you know, one of the first times that we really got media attention was for a sexual health tweet, which was that there was a product out there called Pillsbury Wiener Wraps. And we tweeted an image of the Pillsbury Wiener Wrap and said, no offense to Pillsbury, but ours are free and probably work a lot better. And it was a push to our free condom campaign. And when it got a lot of attention, people were very surprised when they reached out to find out that we weren't just out there cracking jokes. We were actually following evidence because in the months prior to that, we had pitched an idea of we wanted to go in a new direction with sexual health. And so what we did was we sat down and we compiled a 6-page research paper where we pulled together the actual academic peer-reviewed research that's gone into how effective humor is when reaching out to younger audiences on social media about heavily stigmatized topics such as sexual health. You know, even in 2022, there's people that think that sex should still belongs in the bedroom and shouldn't be talked about in public. So people can get very embarrassed when trying to approach, you know, sexual health posts. If it's just, a post about, you know, syphilis rates or whatever, it's awkward. But if you give them something funny, it's approachable. They want to share it. So we did a ton of research before embarking on this and we put together the proposal. We got a green light. And then at the end of it, we actually have metrics that we use. I mean, especially for something like sexual health, you know, people can go online and order free condoms and dental dams. They can access their services. We put a button on the website so that when people went to, you know, book an appointment or order whatever the product is, we asked them how they heard about it. And we gave them an option to say from social media. And so at the end of the first 6 months out of the gate, we were able to provide solid evidence of, hey, by the way, not only did we give research as to why this was a good idea, now we can show you the dramatic increases we've seen in our sexual health team's mandates, what they are setting out to do each year and helping them achieve their goals. So we kind of started it with research, ended it with research, and then carried on from there.
That is a very strategic approach. I knew that you had good stories to tell there about how you came up with your approaches. And I wanted to probe that a little further. The Ottawa Public Health account is very responsive to current events and the issues on people's minds. Essentially, you are great storytellers. Can you share with us how you find your stories?
Absolutely. And as we said, you know, it comes from the audience. You know, we follow the embodiment of, we aren't talking to people as much as we're talking with people. And, you know, that is rooted in, you know, evidence and research into sociological practices, in risk communications, crisis communications. And it's all about just speaking to people on a real human level. You know, you often hear people talk about, you'll hear the phrase, we've all heard it. You know, someone says, oh, that's social media, but this is the real world. That's not true. Social media isn't a different world. It's just another medium that we use to talk to each other. You know, we used to only talk face to face, and then we had telephones, and then we wrote each other letters, and then we got mobile phones and text messaging. And, you know, I mean, I remember having to learn how to use T9 because I'm just that old. And, you know, now we have social media. It's the way we talk to each other. So our entire strategy is we write the content as if the people we were talking to were right there in front of our face. And it is a very human style. It's a very empathetic style. And I find it's so good for your engagement, because you have to often take yourself out of the equation. You know, like when you're working in this, you know, to us, okay, you know, we're just writing our tweets for public health and that. But you have to remember that for the person that was just, you know, wrote their tweet and now they're sitting down having a coffee or their friends, or whatever, when they check a notification, they have a reply from a verified, like, Ottawa Public Health, like, you know, that this big government account actually took the time to give them an answer. That's a really special feeling for somebody. And it will foster a relationship between you and the members of your audience, which is going to make them that much more likely to share your content moving forward.
So that is such a great example of how to create engagement. What other ways do you know that your posts are working? I know that when people respond to you, that's one metric. You talked earlier about measuring your activity with respect to the condom use. What other metrics do you use to measure?
There's different things. I mean, we post, there's different reasons why we would post. Let's put it that way. Sometimes we want people to access a resource. Sometimes we want people to sign up for something. Sometimes we want people to place orders for something. So there's the individual metrics from there. We also track engagements. You know, engagements is a big one for us. I mean, you know, yes, you can look at how many likes a tweet has, for instance, but we really want to know more. You know, like, a quote tweet is way more important for us than a like, right? Like, there's this really fun ownership that happens on social media. See, when Ottawa Public Health tweets something, it's ours, it's our message. I mean, our profile picture is our logo. It's very clearly a message from Ottawa Public Health. But when you take it and retweet it, you're kind of taking ownership of it, right? Like, you're looking at your followers now and saying, okay, well, I, Andrea, want all of you to see this. That is a really significant level of buy-in from an audience, that they're willing to take your message and make it their own. So, you know, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, like, when people actually take the time to share our message to their own followers, that's one of our biggest metrics for success. And then the rest is just doing a lot of organic listening. You know, we don't have, I mean, goodness, we're a taxpayer-funded organization. We couldn't afford a big management platform if we wanted to. But we do a lot of listening just on our own, just qualitative listening, reading the comments, reading the replies. And you can kind of use that to kind of gauge the mood, the feel, the narrative. And then, as we said, you know, we'll always try to be very responsive. And if we notice, you know, we're messaging about topic X and maybe it's not landing quite 100%, and a lot of people are making the same comment or feedback, we'll just roll that into the next round of messaging and address it right there.
So PR practitioners and the public as a whole are battling disinformation and an increasing lack of trust in our institutions. And I'm sure that you see that in some of the comments that you get and in some of the engagement that you're having. How do you tackle this challenge?
Well, with good old-fashioned debunking, usually. I mean, when you look at, you know, the industry leaders out there, I mean, Timothy Caulfield out in West Coast Canada is probably one of the best people in Canada in terms of disinformation. A lot of the relevant research, just hint, we're just going to keep coming back to the importance of constantly doing your research and staying up to date. A lot of the relevant research into misinformation has talked about how important it is to debunk, you know, really, really get out there and hit it head on. There was once a belief that you shouldn't mention the misinformation because you might accidentally fuel it. That has been proven to be incorrect. And most of the research on that is only out in the last 2-3 years. So again, be a nerd and stay constant in research all the time. So we do a lot of debunking, and we do it as quickly as we can. You know, we have an approval process in place that doesn't make us get bogged down in 20 layers of approval. We have a three sets of eyes rule. A content writer, a subject matter expert, and a manager supervisor has to see every post. But when we're doing that listening we talked about before, we'll see something. We'll see some sort of emerging topic, you know, whatever the current new misinformation or disinformation trend is. And we'll get out there and meet it head on, usually by just deconstructing it. And we will often try to use humor. I mean, one of my favorite posts we did was the idea that COVID-19 is a global conspiracy involving every single nurse, doctor, health unit, paramedic, and government agency on earth represents a rather optimistic view of project management. You know, and with us being in Ottawa in a government town, everybody responded to that. You know, we also had one that said, checks Twitter, sees that we're in bed with Big Pharma and getting paid millions, closes Twitter, continues filling out form, requesting approval for $17 to promote a tweet. You know, like we really kind of deconstruct them as much as we can, and we try to do them in as quick of a way as we possibly can.
You sort of led into my next question, which is which were your favorite posts, but you also had a couple of others that you had told me about earlier that were talking about the Super Bowl. Can we go into that one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the Super Bowl, I mean, it can be a segue into Ryan Reynolds, but I mean, I can give you the Super Bowl story. So, yeah, we've had a lot of really, really fun, engaging moments. And again, you know, it all comes back to research. It all comes back to evidence. So the story of the Super Bowl post is this. You talk to any crisis communications theorist. You know, Peter Sandman's incredibly well known. We have Dr. Josh Greenberg here in the Ottawa region, the late and always incredible John Rainford. And they talk to you about the importance of empathy and openness and transparency when communicating during a crisis. And when you think about the Super Bowl, right, think about Super Bowl 2021, when, you know, we were still in the middle of a wave and we'd asked everybody to please watch the Super Bowl virtually with friends, just with members of your household in person and everybody else virtually. That's a big ask. I mean, think about the football community. Think about all the people you know that watch the Super Bowl. It's about how cramming 40 people into a room and everybody yelling and screaming and sharing food. Like, it's a public health nightmare. So we asked them to not do that. That was a really big ask. So the very least we could do is take the time to acknowledge it. So when we wrote the post, we wrote it with no other intention than we wanted it to be a vehicle to deliver that empathetic thank you message. And so then we wanted it to be shared, right? Like we talked before about how do we, you know, how do we gauge a good post? There was no link in this. There was no thing for people to click. We just needed to get shared as far as we could. Well, that's where we came up with the idea of a bait. We've used baits before. We had a sexual health post the fall of 2020 where we said, blah, 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 to do a sexual health, chapter 68. And it was a very blatant bait because our comments were immediately filled with people being like, oh, I think you got the chapter wrong by one number. And it was, you know, a way to drum up engagement. So with the Super Bowl, we pulled the same gag and we intentionally wrote in this mistake of, you know, congratulations to the Bruce, put in the, and the whole thing was just a bait. We wanted people to reply to us and say, Bruce, you had one job. And that would give us chances to interact with the audience, which, as we said before, is the way to drum up that engagement and build the familiarity. I mean, there was one individual that replied very early on. This all played out at about 11 o'clock at night. And I mean, I was up anyway with an infant, so I was enjoying myself and replying. And somebody said, Bruce is either in deep, or Ottawa Public Health is about to say, now that we have you all here, wear a mask and stay away from people. So we literally copy pasted his message and replied right back to him and just said, now that we have you all here, wear a mask and stay away from people. I mean, that one reply got over 4,000 likes. People loved to see it, that engaging style. And it took off. In the days following, we got contacted by a data analytics firm, which said that of all the tweets that used the official Super Bowl hashtag, ours was the seventh most interacted with tweet globally. That includes the posts from the teams, the leagues, the players, everything. So it really blew up and took off for us.
That's actually an incredible testament to the creativity because, I mean, you're competing with all the U.S. companies and brands that had lots and lots of funds behind them. So that's great. You touched on it briefly. I touched on it briefly. So we can't end the interview without asking what's on everyone's mind now. What is the deal with Ryan Reynolds?
Well, other than the fact that he's wonderfully handsome and a genuinely fantastic individual, that all, honestly, that all just came, I'm still in disbelief that it happened. You know, it came so out of the blue. So as we said, you know, the Super Bowl post happened in February. By the middle of March, it had kind of become, I mean, a borderline term of endearment slash insider knowledge to OPH social media that when we had a good post, you know, even a month later, people were replying to me like, great job, Bruce. And when, you know, when people wanted to ask us a question on Facebook and Twitter, they would write in the comments and reply and refer to us as Bruce. It just sort of became this thing that kept building. And then one day out of nowhere, on a Tuesday afternoon that I will remember forever, we got a DM to our Twitter account from Ryan Reynolds. And it was just a really kind compliment. I actually screen grabbed it and posted it on my personal Facebook because I'm like, okay, well, this is it. I've peaked. I'm done. And it was a wonderful moment. And in the hours, I mean, we gave him a nice reply and we thanked him. And in the hours that followed, myself and the other three members of the team kept messaging each other saying, we don't want to be those people. You know, he reached out with a kind word. We don't want to try to get something from him. But on the other hand, we had the idea of, could we get him to be Bruce? And we said, we'll never forgive ourselves if we don't ask. So we asked. And he was quite receptive to it. And there was a little bit of a back and forth. The next thing you know, he said, would you write me a script? We said, sure. So we came together on the Wednesday. A secret team of five of us came together over our lunch because we were ridiculously busy and had no time for this. We called it Project Bruce. I spent about 45 straight minutes just watching his videos, getting a feel for his style and his tone. We wrote a script, edited it, reviewed it, emailed it to him that evening. He got back to us within a couple of hours. Love it. Great. Here's the video. So then we took it and it was just a rough cut. So we added in our graphics and whatnot. And then it went off on Friday morning, and it is to this day the most successful thing we've ever put on our social media. And my favorite part about it, other than just how amazing it is, it was the first time we'd really been able to give a thank you to people. You know, so much of what we do is, as we've been talking about, is we need the audience to help. You know, we need the audience to engage with us, and we need our followers to share our posts. And people had been with us through this entire pandemic and helping the account grow. And everybody in Ottawa and all of our followers got to wake up on that Friday morning to that. You know, it was our thank you to the people. And it was so wonderful.
I just love hearing you speak about your work. Your passion, your enthusiasm is just so invigorating. I love it. And I'm so impressed with the choices you make, the research you use, how you apply that to your work. Honestly, I hope the listeners, if they're my students... keyword research. I really appreciate that messaging. So what I'd like to offer you just as the final question, like, what are your final thoughts? Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. I mean, well, you hit the nail on the head with the research. I mean, there are a lot of incredibly wonderful people that have dedicated their lives to, you know, finding the best ways to communicate with people. There's an incredible amount of research out there. And you just have to go out and find it and learn it and then figure out a way to apply it to whatever it is you're trying to do. And don't stop trying. I mean, never stop swinging for the fences. They're not all going to be home runs, and you have to accept that. I mean, it's really fun to sit here and talk about the great posts. But my goodness, Andrea, we could probably spend an hour and a half doing a podcast on the posts that fell flat, on the things that we thought were going to be great. And we thought this is going to do awesome. And I think we lost followers when we posted it did so terrible, but that's okay. And you're like, you know what? I really thought it was going to be great and it didn't. And you can't let it get you down. And you got to just accept the fact that, you know what, you might fail 10 times in a row, but that 11th time could be the home run you need, and just keep going.
That's terrific. I wish you all the best of luck in your role at Ottawa Public Health. And I hope that you get a few more home runs. I wish you that. So thank you again, Kevin Perrin, Ottawa Public Health's Program and Project Management Officer.
Thank you. I very much appreciate this.
PR Delivered is available on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. You can reach me, Andrea Tavchar, on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you to Ryan Garbett for music and production.